Thank you for checking out Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. It really means a lot to me that you're listening to this podcast. If you listen and you like the content, then make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave a review. Please do that. And also go check me out on some of my other platforms. I have a long-running YouTube channel. I've got a blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com. If you're interested in becoming a CRA or you're interested in getting a career in this industry, go to thecraacademy.com. If you're a research site owner interested in getting more studies for your site or negotiating better contracts for your site, go to my blog, theclinicaltrialsguru.com, and check it out. I offer consulting services. If you're a pharma, biotech, life sciences company, a CRO, I own a startup CRO, and we're here to help you, whatever it is you want. If you're a CRO, we can white label a lot of services for you. We have CRA coverage across the country at cost. We can do this at scale. If you're a pharma company, we are a full service CRO, and we're very confident in our pricing, and we are extremely competitive at bidding. And if you're also interested in your own digital marketing and leveraging a podcast maybe for yourself, reach out to me, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Again, thank you very much and enjoy the show. One quick thing to discuss before we get into the episode is we have a conference in October 4th through the 7th in 2019 in Orlando, Florida. We have a Kickstarter campaign right now. Not only will you get massive discounts if you contribute, but you will also get tons of perks from myself, from Chris, from other people in our company. You'll get tons of that. And we can actually make this happen. It's going to be the best conference ever created in the industry, and definitely one with the most high-tech and social media integration. So hope to get all of you guys to contribute and see you there October 4th through 7th, Orlando 2019. Go to the Kickstarter page. The link is in the show notes. Get yourself some massive discounts and some perks. Enjoy the show. Guru Nation, welcome to episode 215 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. This is Dan Sfera. I've got Chris Sauber to my front. How's it going?
Front.
And the camera's all on you right now. We're doing a split screen, actually. So how did you like our 8-hour telephone? This is the first podcast post-telephone. I still have my voice.
It was interesting.
Why was it interesting?
It was a lot more active than I anticipated.
Me too. It was literally like I started it
6 hours of it. Well, that's not fair because about an hour and a half of that 6 hours was lunch. But for the first 6 hours, it was very active.
Yeah, I literally started it, and within a minute, I had people on asking questions, and yeah. I was amazed. And they stuck around the entire time.
Well, there were some lulls the last couple hours, but
lunch killed it.
No, it was still fairly active when we came back, but
right.
The last 2 hours were a little slower.
But the last hour picked up pretty good.
With two people, yes.
Yeah. And then the last guy who called, and I recommended he do a podcast for Koreans.
Oh, yeah.
That was good.
Which he won't do.
Too bad. If you're listening or watching, do it. Okay, so episode 215, we actually took calls yesterday. And one of the calls is from a CRA. A lot of our clients, Chris, are CRAs that want to open sites.
This is true.
We have helped many CRAs successfully transition into being site owners, although they still have one foot in the CRA game.
Well, there's a few that
have completely... And you always should. Even I have my foot in the CRA game.
A few have completely stepped away from being a CRA. But most, I think most still are CRAs as well as site owners.
I dabble as well in the CRA world, but not much. Mm-hmm. But these clients, most of them are doing good. Like, not fantastic, where, you know, they could actually quit their job confidently.
Right.
But I think they could quit their job.
And that's what they're doing, right? They're testing the waters to see if they can quit being a CRA.
So this entire episode is going to be about how to successfully transition from a CRA into a site owner. And it's very weird for this advice to be coming from us, because we did not do that. We both are involved in both aspects, CRA and site ownership, but neither one of us started as a CRA and then a site owner. But we've helped, would you say dozens?
A lot of CRAs. Yeah, 10 to 15, I would say.
I would say dozens, yeah.
In the last multiple dozens, but no, at least multiple. 10 to 15.
If you count the last 4 years.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Not all have been successful.
Well, yeah. One in particular I can think of. We didn't expect that one to be successful.
No. But that raises a good question. Because at this point, helping dozens of them transition.
Sure.
We can kind of tell who has... Well, it's easy to tell who's going to fail, for the most part.
Yeah, I would agree.
Sometimes they'll surprise you. But it's tough to tell who's going to actually do good.
Well, I think there's certain things, identifiers, right? One, how responsive are you? How quickly do you get back to important things, like, say, returning CDAs and responsiveness to emails that are crucial, right?
Right.
I think that you can tell by the CRAs that are very slow to respond, they're less likely to succeed, right? And it's not because they're lazy by any means. It's just that they're overworked as CRAs as it is.
But is that the biggest setback that we've seen from the CRAs that have tried to transition that we've helped? Is not responding to emails, or is it something
else? No, there's other things. I'm just saying that's one identifier, right?
Okay.
In which you just don't have the time to do all that's necessary. And there's not a lot necessary,
that's
right?
That's the initially. Obvious one that comes to mind is, hey, you know, how are we going to find this time? Like the phone call with the guy yesterday.
Right, exactly.
But he insists he has time.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, if you're able to do your job and still have... It doesn't take a lot of time initially, maybe half hour a day to dedicate to the research, right? To check your emails outside of your CRA email.
Especially when it's a brand new research clinic.
Yeah,
there's really not much going on the first 3 months.
Especially if you hire us, in which we're handling your business development. Obviously, if you're doing your own business development, a lot more time necessary.
Yeah, you're going to need to spend weekends and evenings just pounding away on clinicaltrials.gov.
Yep.
Sending out emails, follow up with all of them.
Yep.
Have some kind of a CRM like HubSpot where you're tracking all this. Or you can just pay us $1,000 a month and we do this for you.
Exactly.
Which we have done for dozens.
Yep.
Right? So the good news, if you're a CRA listening or watching and are considering this, because there are, for every of this dude that we talked to yesterday, there's like probably 30 out there listening or watching.
Okay.
That are... thinking that also, they're just not calling us or emailing.
Sure. They're contemplating.
They might after this video, after this podcast, but not yet. Sure. They're like on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news for them is that unlike your first day or your first month or even your first year when you were a CRA, it's not going to be that busy initially as a site owner.
No.
In fact, the first 3 months...
You're lucky if it is actually that busy.
Right. It's not going to be the case. So one of the myths and misconceptions that these CRAs have is, hey, I don't have the time initially. And that's exactly wrong, because you do have time initially, because there's not much time you need to be putting into it initially.
Well, there's a little bit of upfront work, right? You have to establish a site in terms of who's my PI, where's my location, all of that. And that takes some work. But after all of...
Make a website, although I can do that for you.
After you have the foundation, which that's all the foundation. Once that's in place, and you can probably...
What's the foundation? That. Break it down. What's the foundation?
Again, having a place to conduct trials, right? Okay.
PIs first.
Right. I was just... No specific order. Okay. I was just saying you need a location.
Mm-hmm.
You need a PI. Mm-hmm. Right? You need some equipment. Right? If you're establishing a research site, which isn't ideal, but that works too. You need some equipment. You maybe need some help, maybe in terms of emails and phone calls potentially, but you know that can be yourself as well. But if you want somebody else to handle that aspect, then you need to not necessarily hire somebody, but maybe get a friend to do it or something.
Mm-hmm.
Once that's in place, I think that's the foundation.
That's the foundation. And quick interruption, Antonio Brown got a 53-yard touchdown.
Wow, pretty nice.
Very good fantasy week, going on 10-0. Just want to throw that in there.
No, very important.
Very important. Okay, so once you get the foundation, that does take work. You're right. That part is time consuming.
Right.
Getting that PI, getting the office, figuring out the layout.
Getting
the
equipment.
Do they have enough space? Do they have patience? And then even beyond that, okay.
Well, you're not worried about patience till you have a study, right?
Well, you're worried about them having patience begin with.
Well, right? That's selecting your PI, right?
Correct.
So that's part and parcel of that.
Yeah, but a lot don't know that. And they think, okay, I have a doctor and he's a hospitalist. Well,
right.
That's not ideal because hospitals don't really have patients.
Well, they see patients, but they're not their patients.
They're not their patients in a clinic.
Right.
You know, they're in a hospital and they're only seen because they're sick.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
They're acutely ill. They're not coming in for outpatient visits.
Correct.
And willing to consider studies as a treatment option.
Right.
Right? So that is time consuming. And then the next tier below that or above that foundation, I guess, is things like setting up a website, getting an email address.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes finding studies. Mm-hmm. Let's look for studies.
Once you have the foundation.
Let's get a CLIA waiver. Let's get equipment, right?
Once you have all the foundation, and I guess those would all be part of the foundation too. I forgot to mention CLIA waiver. And maybe a hosting service for email and website. That would be foundation
too. I would recommend Gmail for email and Squarespace for the website.
But once all that's in place, now it kind of subsides a bit as far as work that needs to be done, right? Because there is no real more work to do other than maybe some communication with your PI just to keep them happy. You'd have to listen to a previous podcast to understand what we're talking about there. But
Give them a Cliff Notes version.
You want your PI to stay involved in mind, right? You don't want them to think, oh, I'm not hearing from this person any longer, so I guess I'm not doing research.
And the only way to
lose interest.
The only way to ensure, at least for me, the only way to ensure that you're doing that is over communication, which takes time.
It doesn't take a lot.
It doesn't take a lot, but you have to do it.
Yeah.
You have to take 10 minutes from your day.
Not even that necessarily, right? You could do an email a week, just an update, right? I'm working on trying to get studies. I just want you to know. We're still pursuing, just nothing.
This is still priority number one for me. I just don't want you to think I'm not doing anything.
Exactly. Nothing's developed, but something will soon.
Yes.
Something like that.
Thank you for your patience.
You can send that email. It takes 5 minutes, right?
Right.
Once a week.
Right. But the important thing is to do it, to make a habit out of
it. Sure. So, I mean, you're not going to dedicate it anymore. Again, if you're doing it all yourself, it's going to take a lot more time. But again, if you outsource your business development, again, to Dan and I, then half an hour a week, tops, right? Half an hour tops of time until you get that study.
Right.
And then things change again.
Okay, so half an hour tops. So basically what you're telling me is I don't need to quit my job as a CRA.
Correct.
To do this.
Correct.
So now it becomes...
Your upfront work, I would guesstimate, will take you... let's take the PI out of the equation because I have no idea how long that's going to take. But outside of that, you're looking at 20 hours of work tops, I would guess, right? For everything else.
Yeah.
And then however long it takes you to get a PI. Might take an hour, might take months of time.
Now, let's say that the foundation has been set, as you put it, all right? And let's say now it comes time to get studies.
Mm-hmm.
So now... You, as the CRA, have to decide, how am I going to do this? Am I going to just email people like Dan says? Am I going to hire Dan?
Well,
I obviously think you should do that. But both.
If you're doing it all yourself,
allocate time for that.
Yeah, well, if you're doing it all yourself, you're probably, I mean, if you want to be successful, you're probably going to have to spend at least 10 hours a week doing it, minimum.
So 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
For the 5-day
work week.
Work week. To email and follow up and do feasibilities and schedule site selection visits and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Right. Or we can do most of that for you, other than scheduling the site selection visits. That's you. But feasibilities, all that stuff takes time.
Yep.
Okay. But it's doable for someone who's a CRA.
Tough, but yeah.
2 hours. I think every CRA has an extra 2 hours a day. They all say they don't.
Well, no, of course. Everybody has
an extra 2 hours a day. If you actually would audit their time, you would see that they
do. You have an extra 2 hours a day. I have an extra 2 hours a day. Everybody does. Yes, but the thing is do you want to give up what you're doing with those 2 hours to do this?
Right.
Right, that's the question.
Well, some really want to watch their football. Some really want to...
Or relax and read a book, watch something on TV, watch a movie, whatever, right?
So guess what? If you're going to do this, you have to take it out of your relaxation time.
Right, or your entertainment time, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, but it's possible.
Sure,
right?
Sure, it's possible.
Two hours a day minimum, Monday through Friday, for biz dev.
Right.
Okay. Now you, let's say you get a site selection visit, right? You got to schedule it on a day. Not only that works for your PI. This is your first SSV. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not only on a day that works for your PI, but it has to work for you.
Right.
The CRA, because remember, you're still a full-time employee.
And
you're supposed to be on the clock.
Doesn't necessarily have to work for you as a CRA. If you've hired somebody to be a coordinator, but we don't recommend that. So you're going to act as the coordinator initially, right? Because you want to save costs on expenses.
Yeah.
So you're going to, in air quotes, be the coordinator, right? So you need to schedule it. If you're doing it this way, you need to schedule it with your schedule.
So you did, for example, you did a site selection visit today.
Sure. Right?
It took you only, how long did it take?
I was there for 2 hours.
2 hours.
Well, hour and a half, excuse me.
For you, you're not a full-time employee of any CRO.
And I wasn't there for the whole site selection visit either.
How long would it be for?
A typical site selection visit, I think, is 3 to 4 hours.
Okay.
I would say that's typical.
So, you've got to here's another thing, okay? And I've never had to deal with this. When I do CRA stuff, I'm an independent contractor. And my CRO I work for, they know. They're aware of it.
Right.
Right?
You make your own schedule,
for the most part. Now, many of these CRAs are on the clock. They're salaried.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or they're just 9 to 5, or they have hours they have to bill for.
Well, even
they,
you're outside, you're abnormal in terms of your CRA work, right? Because
even but a contractual contractor is not abnormal.
I know it's not, but you are. Well, what I mean by that is, even an independent contractor typically has such a workload that it's full time for them,
right?
Whereas it's not for you. Is what I mean by that.
Right. Okay. What I'm trying to get at is, in one of our business partners had this. She actually felt guilty taking time, you know, because she's on the clock all day for the CRO. She's salaried, so it's like all day you're expected to do stuff,
right?
And she had to, like, basically she ditched work. She worked from home, but she ditched work. And you know how they make sure that you're working? They do all these teleconferences and all this nonsense,
right,
that you have to attend.
Right.
So she ditched some of those to go
take care of her business.
Take care of patient recruitment.
Sure, her business.
Site selection visit. So a lot of people, a lot of CRAs are in that boat too.
Oh, sure.
Now, if you're an independent contractor, this is easy. There's no dilemma. You're a contractor.
Right.
You can do this. But if you are a full-time employee, I honestly don't know how I would handle this, because I was never in this situation. I know, like, I do what I got to do all the time. But I don't know how I would feel about that. How would you feel about that?
So in my mind, I would not have an issue with it if I was salaried. It's different if you're paid hourly. Okay, and why I say that is because as a salaried employee, you're expected to get your work done, whatever your work might be, and that's what the salary is for, right? So long as you're work is getting done, then it's okay if you have an hour here or an hour there during the workday, right? Because maybe you're putting that hour in on the weekend or later in the evening.
Right.
Right. If you're getting paid by the hour, right, like you're clocking in somewhere on your laptop working from home, and you're not clocking out and going and doing these things, that's a little different to me.
Right. So that's how you would deal with it. I mean,
that's how I rationalize it.
Yeah. I wouldn't know how I would.
Because you're salaried, right? Salaried just means you're going to get this lump sum for the salary month means you're to do your paid work. For
a task, yeah. To right. do like your work. To
complete your work. Doesn't mean you necessarily have to work from 9 to 5.
Right. But when you work for some of these CROs, they, even if you're salaried, they stipulate not necessarily hours, but they give you things you're expected to do.
Sure.
That is basically 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 or 8 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's a teleconference all the time. There's meetings all the time.
Sure.
And the reason is for these work at home people to make sure that they're actually
working
and not doing stuff like this. And these CROs are going to love us after this podcast. We're teaching you exactly how to do it, but you should. So, okay. So we kind of took care of that issue. It's basically, you got to follow your own moral compass when it comes to that. If you're a contractor, it's easy. Chris says if you're salaried. I mean, it's starting to get in the gray area at
that point. Well, of course it's in the gray area. But in my opinion, you're salaried to complete your work. As long as you're completing your work, that's what matters.
Do you tell your manager that you're opening a site?
Probably not. Regardless of contract, salaried, or hourly. Regardless, I don't think you're telling.
Because on my contract, I tell them.
Yeah, okay. But I think
many people would say that's stupid, but I'd rather be assured that I'm, you know,
like not doing anything wrong.
Correct.
Right, but I think with a lot of employers, regardless of how you're paid, they would not care for this.
I don't think so either.
So, yeah, I don't think you want to tell your employer that, yeah, I'm going to start my own business. So
common sense applies there.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, let's say you owned a coffee shop and you hired a barista and the barista says, you know, one day I want to start my own coffee shop, but I still want to work here too.
Yeah.
You say, no, goodbye.
Well, our coordinators say they want to own their own sites.
Yeah, but they involve us too.
Yeah, they have to involve us. They don't have to, but they love us so much that they want to.
Sure. Point is typically your employer is going to say, well, you know, good luck, goodbye.
So keep it under wraps.
Yeah, I would say.
Some of our clients go to the extremes of changing their names, like using aliases for their site name.
Yep.
So that when they do a feasibility survey, or like they'll have their husband do the feasibility survey.
Or their
survey,
wife. Yeah.
And then they'll put like a relative as the contact, right?
Yep.
There's different strategies like that. Choose whatever works for you.
And then others just don't care.
Others don't care.
They don't tell their employer, but they don't care either.
It only really becomes an issue when it's like the same company, the same CRO or sponsor.
Then you're looking at doing a study with them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Because now the sponsors, remember, the sponsors, even if they're using a CRO, have to approve every CRA that's working on their study.
Right.
So they might recognize your name as a CRA. And then they see you as a site contact.
Right.
And they're like, hey, this is a typo.
It's kind of odd here.
And now they tell the project manager, and the project manager's like, no, that's not true. It must be a typo. And then they ask you, and now you have to tell them a lie or tell them the truth.
Right.
Right? So what's your advice there? Because our clients have dealt with this.
Yeah.
No one's gotten fired as far as I know.
Well, I think most of our clients use an alias.
Okay.
But if you don't. And nothing's happened. There's been no repercussions because of this.
That we know of.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we would have heard about it if there were.
Yeah.
But
the fear is realer. The fear is stronger than the outcomes.
I think it's logical to have this fear.
Of course. Yeah.
So I don't think it's unnecessary.
It's not like you're ready to quit.
Right.
Or look for a new job.
Right. You still need to pay your bills. So you got to have an income.
At this point, your clinic is your side hustle. Until you can prove.
And it takes a while to see any kind of income from that.
So let's get into that now. How long?
You know, it varies. It can be 3 months, it could be 2-3 years.
Yeah, so building the foundation stage can take a while. Let's say it takes 3 months.
Right.
Okay. The foundation you discussed. Another 3 months after that to get your first site selection visit.
Right.
Another 3 months from that.
These are all averages, by the way.
Right. This is not a rule. Don't quote me on this. Another 3 months from that to get your site activated.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do the investigator meeting. You got to do the startup regulatory contract. SIV. Make sure you have all the kits and all that nonsense that, you know.
Right. Everything's in place to do the study.
That's another 3 months.
Yep.
Now you can start seeing patients. If you have the patients. That's another whole other topic.
Sure.
Now you're seeing the patients. Now it takes another 3 months for that data to get reviewed, monitored, and then a payment to be triggered. So that's how many 3 months
that's
did I say?
That's a year.
That's a year. A year of work.
Right. Until you're seeing revenue.
Until you start seeing revenue. And it doesn't get crazy amount of work until you start seeing patients.
Right. Right.
Which is around month 9.
Right.
By then, you need to decide, in my opinion, even if it's just one study, you need to decide as a CRA, can I do this? Can I be a coordinator and a CRA? Or do I need to hire a coordinator right now?
Well, I'd always recommend hiring a coordinator.
I do too. Unless you're a contract CRA and you're not on site, but
I would still recommend,
days a month.
Even in the, well, yes, if they're like you.
Not like me. Let's say double like me.
Even that would be fine. But if you're
triple,
you're a full-time CRA,
yeah,
you need to hire a coordinator.
Okay.
Right? You're working 40 hours a week.
I agree.
You need to hire a coordinator.
I agree.
You may be able to quit being a CRA after a while, but you're still not going to see enough revenue.
Yeah.
And for at least another 6 months to match or duplicate what you're making as a CRA.
I agree. And then, wait, if you hire a coordinator, what you need to do at that point is what I'm doing here at the clinic where we're sitting, mm-hmm. is quality assurance.
Right.
And that you should know how to do. You're a CRA. This is all you do.
Right. You're just going to do your job.
You're doing
what you've been trained to do at your own
at
site.
At your own company.
Right.
Which that aspect is where CRAs actually are successful.
Sure.
Unlike research naive people that want to open a site. They don't understand the QA aspect,
sure.
QA, QC, whatever you want to call it. They understand maybe a little more of the business. Maybe they're more salespeople. Maybe they have more relationships with doctors, but they don't understand GCP.
Right.
They don't understand what is a source document.
They've never read a protocol.
Right.
Right.
Right. So that's not your problem as
what's
a CRA.
What's a 1,572?
Yeah. That's right. What is a 1,572? So... But the CRAs, they do have some things going against them, namely their employer. I mean, you got to kind of operate discreetly.
Yes,
when it's
we
your
would
own,
advise, yeah.
Right. But another thing is you're used to everything sort of being handed to you as a CRA, as an employee. Like you're given an assignment.
Sure.
You don't need to really hustle for anything. You gotta work, but you don't have to hustle.
You're handed the work.
You're handed the work.
Opposed to going out and getting the work.
And they give you like all your templates.
Sure.
Here's your monitoring report. Here's your follow-up letter. Here's our SOPs. With your new site, you don't have anything. You gotta create all that.
Mm-hmm.
SOPs,
mm-hmm.
source docs.
Unless you hire us.
Unless you hire us. But they know this by now.
Right. We provide those things.
We do. This is why it makes sense to pay us $1,000 a month.
Especially,
we should be charging more than that.
Especially if you're a CRA.
That's right. Because you can afford it at
right.
that point.
And you don't have the time, typically, to do
right.
all of these things.
Right. Now the question becomes, Chris, when do you quit your job as a CRA?
Well, again, that's up to you as the CRA, right? How much money do you... So I think it's about... You have to weigh things, right? How much do I hate my job as a CRA? Am I willing to give...
Maybe you don't hate it.
Right, but most of them do, and that's why they want to start a site, right? They're tired of being a CRA. So, and let's say we're making $150,000 a year as a CRA, and we're pulling in $75,000 a year as a site owner.
Right.
Is that enough?
Maybe.
I mean, do I hate my job enough to give up half my income?
And there's no algorithm. Some do. There's no algorithm
for right, that. It's up to you.
It's subjective.
Yeah, completely up to you as the individual.
To me, it's a no-brainer. If I take a pay cut, but I'm much happier, right? And it's my own business.
Sure.
I'm not working to make some publicly traded company rich.
Right.
I'm not just another metric for IKEA.
Right.
Right? I'm building my own business.
Yeah, and you would have to figure, and rightfully so, I would hope, that if you gave up being a CRA and could dedicate 100% to your business, you would see more
revenue. Kick it up another notch.
You would see more income.
And if everyone wants the backup plan, which I think everyone should have a backup plan.
Sure.
Not like those business strategies where people say burn your boats so you have no other option. That's stupid.
But to succeed.
That's really stupid. Your backup plan is...
I can see the philosophy behind it, but okay,
yeah, go but ahead. It's stupid. In this day and age, it's stupid.
I can see the philosophy is all I'm saying.
Sure. We won't get into that. I think it's dumb. As a CRA, having been a CRA, you can always go back
sure.
to get a CRA
job. Well, maybe not always, but certainly in times like this, you could.
You can always go back. Because even, let's say you were a CRA for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then you started your own site for 2 years. It didn't work out. Now you want to go back.
Well,
guess what? During that 2 year, let's say you were a full-time employee during the 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Future employers don't have to know that you had a failed
site. Oh, of course not.
You just put independent contract CRA, and you put the studies that you worked for. That's it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can even tell the truth, really. I think that might look good, right, to some employers.
I tried to start a site, and I failed. Well,
yeah, I started a site. You don't necessarily have to say you failed, but I started a site. I started my own business, research site.
Right.
So then they know you understand that perspective. I think that would look good to some employers.
Yeah, but then they would possibly think, well, what's to stop you from doing that again?
Yeah, potentially. Potentially.
That's why, if this were me, that's what I would say.
Right.
I wasn't a site owner during the 2 years. I was an independent contract CRA, and I was hired by these sites to do their QA
sure.
for them. I was more of a consultant.
But then you need somebody to back you up on that.
Sure.
You know,
your PI.
Right.
I was a consultant for hopefully you leave sure. on good terms.
Sure. Right? But what I was going to say is...
Or the coordinator you hired.
You can't always get a job as a CRA, and there's times when it's slow, right? When the...
True.
When the industry's laying CRAs off. True,
but somewhat a senior CRA with 10 years or more of experience.
Typically, yes. But not always. I'm just saying not always.
Of course, nothing's ever always.
Right.
Like, you know, you don't always wake up in the morning.
I mean, there's nothing to say that just staying as a CRA, not even having your own site, you know, industry slows down, you might get laid off.
Sure.
Same thing, so.
And guess what? If the industry slows down again, which I don't think it will anytime soon... But if it does, you'll be happy you started a site.
Yeah.
Because you can now lay people off and do the work.
Yeah, be the coordinator.
Because you're not going to lose all your studies. You're going to lose a lot of them if it's another recession.
Right.
But you're still going to have a study here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just at least pay yourself and live hand to mouth.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's still best to own a site. Be an entrepreneur. Now,
not everybody's made out to be an entrepreneur.
I was just going to go there. Okay. I know where you're going with this.
All right.
It's not for everybody.
Right.
And let's get into that in these last 10 minutes.
Okay.
Who is it for?
Well,
it's not for everybody. We know that. That's easy to say. Who is it for?
So, I would say that there's two key components, right? One, you have to be confident in yourself, right? And two, I think you have to have some sort of salesmanship? Yeah.
Or womanship?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be able to sell, right? And you're not selling as a CRA.
You're doing the opposite of selling.
Right. I mean, you might sell a little bit as a CRA in terms of trying to... convince of an investigator they want to do a trial, maybe.
Like right? The one today that did the SSV with you guys?
She wasn't doing any selling.
She was trying to sell on having him tell her boss that she should be the monitor.
Sure, but that's different.
Not a good job. Right. I wasn't there, but from what I hear.
That's not really salesmalship, though.
Okay. But
I don't think.
It's persuasion.
Sure. just some people are not cut out for that.
Yes. That's a good one. I always bring it up. As soon as you start a clinic or any business, but in this world that we're in, as soon as you start a research clinic, forget about your background. I don't care if you have 10 PhDs. You're now a salesperson.
Sure.
Congratulations.
I mean, it's every step, right? Selling to get a study. It's selling patients that they should be involved in a study.
I just sold one before we did this podcast. Get
right.
over here.
Right. And maybe IRBs don't want to hear that, but yeah. You have to sell patients.
You do what you got to do.
Yep.
And sell sponsors or why they should hire your site.
Yep.
Or a contract with your site.
Yep.
Another thing I would add besides sales is the ability to do well, obviously under pressure, but do well with rejection. Because a lot of these people don't get selected.
And that comes back to confidence too, right?
Confidence. But a lot of these people, like we just talked to one earlier, she's the CRA that's starting her own site, struggling because she's overthinking it, first of all. But she's takes it personally that no one's emailing her back on her follow-ups to get studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, that's the norm. Sure. You're not doing anything wrong. You're no different than me.
Right.
If I were to email all those people, it doesn't matter what I say, I'd probably get a similar response rate. You just need to keep doing it.
Sure.
You can't let that stop you. And a lot of these people get frustrated too quickly.
Sure.
And, I mean, it's understandable. There's no money coming in from that business, but that's why you didn't quit your job.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
So, the ability to handle rejection well. You can get rejected a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We get rejected way more, and we've been doing this 13 years.
So, back when
rejected by doctors, by patients, sure. by sponsors, by employees. Rejections.
So, just out of curiosity.
Dikembe Mutombo.
Curiosity. Rejections. Before you knew your wife.
Yes.
Were you rejected more in the dating scene or in research? Where was there more rejection?
When I met my wife.
No, before you met your wife, right? When you were dating.
I was barely in research.
I'm saying really. Comparing that time.
Oh.
To your dating scene, right? Asking women out for a date. Oh,
yeah.
Where was there more rejection? Dating
Pretty
or
much
research?
The same odds. It was like 90% rejection.
Okay.
Yeah. At the bars. And guess what? Even then, I didn't even know I was an entrepreneur. But I never let that.
Never gave up. No. Oh, no. Well, there's another one over
it's
there.
It's funny
Let's
you
go
brought
over
that
there.
Up because my friends would actually laugh. They'd say, look, he's going to go get rejected. And I would. And then I would just do it again to somebody else.
Right.
And they were like, oh, my God. But that it's that.
Sure.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a perfect analogy.
You have to have that kind of tenacity.
Just got to not. Look, I don't take it personally if someone says no.
Sure.
I mean, who am I? Some drunk dude approaching you at a bar. Like, yeah, I would say no to me too.
Right.
Right? Right. You just got to change your tactics.
Sure. And that's true in research too. If you keep getting rejected, maybe try something different.
Yeah, don't quit.
Right.
Don't quit.
Right.
Or maybe something's wrong with them, not you. Sometimes.
Sure, sometimes, but I'd look at yourself first.
I would look at yourself too.
Right.
Okay. I think that's good. Anything else?
No, I think that covers most of it, if not all.
I think it was excellent. Thank you, Chris. Thank you everyone for listening, watching. If you're a CRA, and thinking of owning a site, guess what? You're not alone. There's nothing unique about you.
No?
Nothing.
Huh?
Just go out and do it.
Okay.
Take care.
So hey everybody, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. Again, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you leave a review, if you could be so kind, please. And also go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com if you're interested in learning more about who I am, who some of my guests are. You can have access to some of my YouTube videos. I do a lot of videos about clinical research. So go to theclinicaltrialsguru.com. And you can also call or text me anytime, 949-415-6256. Also follow me on any social media platform. It's Dan Svera. And you can also email me if you'd like, dan@theclinicaltrialsguru.com. Thank you very much.